Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Thursday, September 19th. I'm Lisa Music reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, nuclear power option considered by Humboldt's Energy Agency. Missing Fortuna woman located deceased on Mount Ashland in Oregon. And 1 year later, search for missing woman Bailey Blunt continues. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. K-Mud is in the middle of our fall drive, and if you appreciate K-Mud News daily, Monday through Friday, please consider donating.
This is Sarah Reith with K-Mud. The Intrepid News team in Southern Humboldt keeping us abreast of what's going on with the Great Redwood Trail and the first native-made boat to ply the waters of the Eel River for 200 years. Their disaster reporting is some of the finest in the region. Your support makes it possible for reporters to make a living doing the thing we love to do. And when you support one of us, you support all of us. I'm not the only small-town reporter around here sharing my work with as many outlets as I can. We're lucky here in Mendocino and Humboldt counties that we still have communities that are engaged with the local news and who understand that it's up to us to support the things that are important to us. We're not a news desert, but local news is a fragile ecosystem. Like so much in the world that's precarious right now, it needs care and it needs funding. Help us help you stay informed when it matters most. Go to kmud.org/donate and give what you can. Thanks.
Hey, folks, we have a donation match. Donate during this newscast, and your donation will be matched by an anonymous donor who, like you, really values the KMUD News. Go to kmud.org and push that donate button. It's easy peasy.
The Fortuna community is mourning the loss of one of its own, Carolyn Carrie Carter Griffin, who was found deceased this Tuesday after a multi-day search effort led by Jackson County Search and Rescue, along with Medford Police Force. Known affectionately as Carrie, the 46-year-old was last seen on September 9th near Oak Ridge and was officially reported missing in Lane County. Her disappearance triggered concerns among her family members, who suspected she was undergoing a mental health crisis. The search intensified after video footage captured Griffin walking away from her red Toyota Tacoma on a Mount Ashland camera around 8 a.m. on September 11th. Her vehicle was located 2 days later, prompting an immediate search in the surrounding areas. Tragically, she was found near the summit of Mount Ashland. In a heartfelt social media post, her family shared that, quote, Carrie has been located and passed away peacefully with one of the best views on Mount Ashland, end quote, signaling a poignant end to their fervent search. Griffin had retired from a dedicated career as a U.S. Forest Service supervisor, and her disappearance had mobilized friends and family who traveled to Southern Oregon to aid in the search efforts. As the community reflects on her life, they remember her love for the outdoors and her significant contributions to Forest Service. The Redwood Coast Energy Authority is struggling to meet its green energy goals and is considering accepting cost-free nuclear power from a facility in another county. Daniel Mintz reports.
Seeking to add to its range of carbon-free energy, the Redwood Coast Energy Authority is considering a nuclear option. If chosen, the nuclear power would come from the Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant in San Luis Obispo County. Slated for decommissioning, the plant's operation has been extended to 2030 or beyond. Ratepayers are paying for it, and now power providers have the option of getting energy from the plant at no additional cost. The authority, referred to as RCEA, is struggling to meet its 100% carbon-free and renewable energy goals. At a late August meeting, RCEA account director Jacqueline Haar told the agency's board of directors that an added mix of nuclear and hydroelectric power could achieve the goal.
And the combination of those two gets you over the hump to 100% renewable plus carbon free. There's also, of course, the option of something in between here. So not buying all of the hydrocarbon free, but maybe buying some, or accepting the Diablo Canyon allocation, but not procuring any additional carbon free hydro. So yeah, there are variations amongst this. This is just a selection of potential procurement scenarios. You know, sell some of your renewables, buy more carbon free, because carbon free is less expensive than renewables, like, right? So there's a lot of different procurement options with on the table, but this is meant to be a selection of possible options.
The board staff said if the Diablo Canyon allotment is accepted, it will provide roughly 6.6% of the agency's power load. That will help RCEA meet a goal of 100% carbon-free and renewable power by 2025. If the agency continues its status quo power mix, it will have only 83% of green power by 2026. But RCEA Vice Chair Scott Bauer, a Eureka City Council member, said nuclear power has a dangerous flaw and shouldn't be accepted.
I will say, as one that's never been a big fan, with a spent fuel that lasts for, what, 1,000 generations or something like that, with no storage yet figured out, that I can't support anything like nuclear, because if we care about future generations, they're going to have to deal with hot material, that radioactive material that lasts forever, essentially. But I understand at the same time, you've kind of got it. It's going to be there, but I wouldn't support it for selling just from thinking about the kids' situation.
Board member and Humboldt County Supervisor Natalie Arroyo said if ratepayers are going to pay for nuclear power anyway, they might as well benefit from it. But she also acknowledged the concerns.
Based on the understanding from the presentation that this was already something that we're paying for and a temporary allocation, I'm still... It's another one of those hold your nose and maybe do it for fiscal reasons type decisions in my book, but I also am open to more discussion about it and hearing, and just we know it's being decommissioned and this is sort of its final days, but if we feel that our customers are just absolutely cannot support nuclear even under these circumstances, I think that's a important consideration as well, and I certainly have the trust of our customers.
Arroyo differentiated between accepting power from an existing nuclear plant and taking it from a new one. She said under the circumstances, she would be inclined to accept the nuclear power. But there's also a school of thought that says accepting nuclear power, even from a plant that's already operating, encourages it to continue or expand. Har said the decision to take or leave the Diablo Power has to be made in the next several weeks, and the RCEA board will consider it again at its September 26th meeting. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
The Humboldt County Sheriff's Office is renewing its call for public assistance in the search for Bailey Blunt, who was reporting missing 1 year ago on September 25th, 2023. Blunt, 29, was last seen on September 22, 2023, when she went to retrieve her belongings from a property off Berg Road and Highway 299, where she had previously lived with her ex-boyfriend, Tyler Burrow.
We found out later that she had called for help from a few people because he was drunk and he was waving a gun around. Reported it to us. We got on the phone and we spoke with Jackie Burroughs, Tyler's mom. She went up to the mountain where the trailer was, and we left the next day to go up there. And when we got to Bailey's trailer, it just literally looked like she had just poofed. Her phone was there. Her purse was there. You know, there was an open rock star, like she was just sitting at her table packing. You could tell she was packing her stuff. There were duffel bags full of clothes and everything, and that everything was just left there behind, and she was nowhere to be found.
From the start, Bailey's family has believed something horrific happened to her on September 22nd, as she attempted to finally end the year-long on-and-off relationship with Tyler.
I don't think anything good. You know, she she was on and off of drugs, but her big thing this time was she was finally getting her stuff. You know, she had a house to live in. She had her truck. You know, she has a daughter who doesn't live with her that she was trying to get better so that she could have a relationship with. And she would have never just disappeared without saying anything to my mom. They talk every other day, no matter where she is or what she's getting into.
That was Blunt's sister, Stephanie Baroni, speaking with KMUD News last year after Bailey's disappearance. A manhunt for Burrow ensued. Burrow was eventually located in a wooded area of southern Oregon by observant hunters with Blunt's missing vehicle and dog.
The tip came in to me directly. A hunter had found him up there in that area, and he had a whole camp set up. A TV, a generator. The hunter had pinned his exact coordinate, and then by when he got back to town, he had found me on Facebook, and I got a hold of the Jackson County Sheriff's Department, the lead guy of the task force down there. I sent him the coordinates, and within 3 hours, he was arrested.
At that point, the family had mixed feelings of both relief that Burrow had been caught and grief that the last sliver of hope that Blunt was alive diminished.
I don't know whether to puke or to cry.
But him being apprehended, it's kind of a mixture of being excited and kind of just letting some of the anxiety go, but also the realization that, you know, she is in fact not with him and he doesn't have her held captive and that, you know, he's the only one that holds all the answers to what really happened that day that she went missing.
The second voice heard there was Bailey Blunt's aunt, Carrie Madison. The family believed that answers would be forthcoming after Burrow's arrest.
I guess where we go from here is we kind of just let the detectives do their work.
However, without a body and with no witnesses, Burrow was released, leaving the family wondering.
But where's Bailey?
In a press release issued by the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office, the lead agency in the missing persons case, the department said that despite multiple search efforts, including the use of specialized canine teams and extensive ground searches, no trace of Blunt has been found. Investigators have interviewed more than 30 individuals, including Burrow, and have conducted numerous searches of properties, vehicles, and electronic devices. Tips have led to searches in Humboldt and Trinity counties and as far as Oregon, but no breakthroughs have been made. Bailey's mother has been frustrated by local law enforcement and what she believes is a lack of cooperation with the family who is intent on locating the missing woman.
No law enforcement officer has ever met me on the ground.
In a phone interview around the same time, HCSO's Captain Brian Quinnell stated,
"We have to follow the Constitution. We have to have probable cause to seek warrants. We have to have articulable facts before we can do certain things, either make an arrest or ask for a warrant. And unfortunately, people's most interactions with law enforcement come from television or movies, and those just aren't real life. They're not realistic. So people have an unrealistic expectation of what law enforcement can do. And trust me, I empathize with the families, especially when they have a missing loved one, and believe that there's more that we can be doing. And because they don't understand that the integrity of the investigation requires that we not divulge everything that we are doing in the hopes of holding somebody accountable if there was a crime committed. Realistically, those are big hurdles. And again, not just in this investigation, but a lot of investigations that we do is that just the public really is misinformed on what we can and cannot do as a law enforcement organization.
But as the family remains in suspended grief, believing that Bailey was murdered almost a year ago, her body unrecovered, they want law enforcement to do whatever it takes to locate Bailey.
When you ask me ultimately, what do I want? I want them to trump up his charge and then cut a deal.
A few days shy of the one-year disappearance of Bailey Blunt, the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office issued a plea to the public asking for information, believing there are individuals who may know what happened to Blunt. Blunted's described as 5 feet 5 inches tall, weighing 200 pounds, with brown hair, brown eyes, and distinctive tattoos, a trident on her neck and a fishing hook on her left hand. Anyone with information is encouraged to contact Investigator Jennifer Taylor at the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office or provide an anonymous tip by calling 707-268-2539 or emailing hso@co.humboldt.ca.us. In state news, California voters may soon decide to ban the last form of constitutionally allowed slavery in the state, as a ballot measure this November will propose ending involuntary servitude, even as a punishment for a crime. KPFA's Audie McAfee reports.
If you go have a person in prison, then treat them humanely.
Sitawa Natambu Jama spent 34 years of a 43-year prison sentence in solitary confinement. He was committed for a murder that someone else later confessed to and granted a compassionate release earlier this year. While incarcerated, he says he was forced to work. But when he and others refused to, they were either thrown into solitary confinement or had their privileges revoked until they went back to work. He says the issue with prison labor is not that people don't want to work, it's that they have no choice.
When you have policies and procedures to enslave you by proxy, then it really is cruelty to the individual.
He's among the formerly incarcerated people and advocates calling for an end to prison slavery or involuntary servitude. California is one of the 16 states that allow involuntary servitude in prisons, but that could soon change. A bill on the November ballot, Proposition 6, the End Slavery in California Act, would amend the state constitution that allows the use of forced labor for punishment of a crime.
As of to date, we have removed it from Colorado, Nebraska, Oregon, Alabama, Tennessee, Vermont.
That's Jamelia Land. She is the co-founder of the Abolish Slavery National Network, or ASSN. It's a coalition making a national push to remove involuntary servitude from state constitutions.
And at any given moment, if you are accused of a crime, not just in this state, but in this country, that you too can become a legalized slave because of involuntary servitude.
Prop 6 was originally introduced as ACA 3 in 2020, but 2 years later it died in the Senate after the discussion shifted from ending involuntary servitude to the bill's potential impacts, like increasing the wages for incarcerated people. But the Abolish Slavery National Network didn't give up, and in 2023, Assemblymember Lori Wilson, a Democrat from Fairfield, picked up the bill. She spoke on the Assembly floor in June, just before lawmakers agreed to put it before voters on the November ballot.
Slavery is wrong in all forms, and California should be clear in denouncing that in its constitution.
Prop 6 is backed by more than 30 organizations, including the ACLU of California, the California Teachers Association, the Anti-Recidivism Coalition, and the California Democratic Party. The only group opposed is the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, or CDCR. In a statement to the Los Angeles Times, CDCR spokesperson Vicki Waters said working is a legal requirement that makes sure incarcerated people participate in something meaningful. But prison reform advocates disagree. Alyssa Moore is the NorCal Reentry Coordinator for All of Us or None, a member-led group fighting against discrimination of former and current incarcerated people.
So after, 10, 15 years, they've never had a right to choose anything, make any choices. How do we parole them at the end of this time and say, now they're rehabilitated and they're just instantly going to start practicing agency and know how to make good choices?
Moore experienced involuntary servitude when she was sentenced to prison for 25 years for murder when she was 17 years old. She says incarcerated people need time to process the issues they are going through, and they should be allowed to do that through their own agency. She says many incarcerated people miss out on rehabilitative programs and education due to their extensive work schedules. Sitawa Natambu Jama says banning forced labor as a punishment for a crime would allow incarcerated people to focus on education and rehabilitative programming.
If you didn't have to do involuntary work, what would you want to be doing instead?
The thing is, we would like to be getting more education. More things to keep us healthy, like athletic things for everybody to do, because health is important to your livelihood. So we do like to do more of that.
The CDCR says incarcerated people working is a way for them to pay dues to their victims. Incarcerated workers make very little money, but they produce some of the most common American goods, from license plates to the very chairs and tables that are in most classrooms across the country. And they make the products found in most kitchens, like Frosted Flake cereal and Ballpark hot dogs, to gold medal flour and Coca-Cola. According to Tufts University, some 4,100 companies rely on prison labor in the U.S. Incarcerated people also work as firefighters. It's one of the highest paid jobs in prison. Incarcerated fire crew members earn between $1 to $2 per day in California. Half of those wages go to administration, and another 5% is taken for victims' restitution, leaving most incarcerated firefighters with barely half a dollar a day, according to a report by Vox. According to the CDCR, incarcerated firefighters save California approximately $100 million annually, mostly from the negligible wages paid to them. Amika Moda was a firefighter for 2 years while she was incarcerated for 7 years for vehicular manslaughter. She's now the executive director of Sister Warriors. It's a member-led organization that supports incarcerated women and trans people. She supports Prop 6 and ending forced prison labor.
People's drive to kind of work and excel and heal and rehabilitate, that's not going to change. That is something that just exists in individuals that are figuring out their own paths of rehabilitation. But what will change is this system that is propping up slavery.
Removing forced labor as a punishment for a crime in California could also allow incarcerated people to advocate for better working conditions and wages. Moore, with All of Us Are None, says many incarcerated people are scared to advocate because they could get hit with violations.
They can take our phone calls. They can take our right to exercise, to program on the yard. They can take our canteen from us. They can take our visits from us. They can take our family visits from us.
Even worse, they can be denied parole. The CDCR says if a person is denied parole, it can take between 3 to 15 years until their next hearing. Jamelia Land with the Abolish Slavery National Network is disappointed Proposition 6 took this long to make it to the ballot.
Are we still having an economic conversation about the value of human beings in a system that they are being exploited and forced to work under no circumstance in 2024, whether it's California, Nevada, or any other state, should legalized constitutional slavery still be on the books?
Should Proposition 6 pass, involuntary servitude in U.S. prisons would still be legal under the 13th Amendment in the Constitution. And while federal law supersedes state law, David Sklansky, a professor at Stanford Law School, says it won't conflict if voters end prison slavery at the state level.
Because the 13th Amendment doesn't affirmatively require that people who are being punished for a crime be forced to work.
He says that means the CDCR could not invoke the 13th Amendment if an incarcerated person refuses to work if Prop 6 passes. If passed, Proposition 6 will go into effect January 1st of 2025. Voters will decide at the ballot box November 5th. For KPFA, I'm Audie McAfee.
An activist group called the Rainbow Brigade gathered outside the headquarters of X to bid farewell to the controversial CEO Elon Musk, citing his ties to Trump and urging the company to uphold democratic values as it leaves the city. Pacifica Radio's Jose Velasquez reports.
Flush Musk! Goodbye, Musk! Flush Musk! Goodbye, Musk! Flush Musk!
The group, the Rainbow Brigade, has been protesting against Musk's ownership of the social media company X, formerly Twitter, for the last couple of years. And they showed up today underneath the now blank Twitter sign to say they've had enough of what they say is the CEO's spreading of misinformation. Led by community organizer Michael Petrelis, who was dressed in a rainbow suit and top hat, the group delivered a final message to Elon Musk on X's last day in San Francisco.
There are so many reasons why we felt it was important to show up the last day and say, Mr. Musk, goodbye. We are flushing you down the toilet.
Petrelis, flanked by a small group of supporters, said Elon Musk should step down as the owner of X. He accused the billionaire CEO of using his platform to spread misinformation on Vice President Kamala Harris.
We want to get rid of Musk. We would love for Twitter to return to be a force for democracy. But under Musk's ownership of Twitter, it's turned into a cesspool of lies.
After this summer's attempted assassination of former President Donald Trump, Musk used his social media page to endorse the Republican candidate. Musk has used his platform to criticize the media, President Biden, the Democratic Party, Kamala Harris, and what he calls the woke virus. Musk said Harris's plans for food subsidies and rent control will turn the U.S. into Venezuela, emptying food shelves and destroying the incentive to build new housing. Critics of Musk's takeover of the social media giant say misinformation and propaganda run rampant without proper moderation and fact-checking. Petraeus says he fears if Trump is elected, he will offer Elon Musk a presidential appointment. Petraeus says the Rainbow Brigade will continue to protest against Musk and Trump for the protection of democracy. Though X has been headquartered in San Francisco for over a decade, its billionaire CEO has been highly critical of the city. On social media, he said there is usually several thousands of mentally ill drug addicts on the street of San Francisco. He has also called for the arrest and or dismissal of San Francisco politicians, whom he blames for the decline of the city. While X's move out of the Bay Area has received mixed reactions from San Franciscans, some are sad to see X leave, which has operated on Market Street since 2012. With Teresa Wares-Bianska, I'm Jose Velasquez, Pacifica News, KPFA.
In national news, Democratic lawmakers and environmental advocates announced a new bill to hold fossil fuel polluters accountable, fund climate damage recovery. KPFA's Zinnick Ball reports.
The Polluter Pays Climate Fund Act seeks to hold accountable the biggest domestic fossil fuel companies, as well as any foreign-owned energy companies doing business in the United States. Under the plan, these companies would pay into a $1 trillion climate fund. The fees would only apply to companies responsible for at least 1 billion tons of carbon dioxide emissions between the years 2000 and 2022. How much a given company contributes would be proportional based on a percentage of their global emissions. The bill was introduced by Democratic Senator Chris Van Hollen of Maryland and Democratic Representative Jerry Nadler of New York at a press conference outside Capitol Hill. They were flanked by advocates from the League of Conservation Voters, the Sierra Club, among others. Senator Van Hollen said the fund will address a range of issues that are a result of the impacts of climate change.
So what do we intend to do with these funds? Well, we intend to help address harm and damages caused, to build resilient infrastructure to protect our communities, to provide funding for climate disaster planning and relief efforts, to try to avoid the damage that we would otherwise see to our communities, to support the communities that have borne the brunt of the crisis, especially communities of color, and create millions of good-paying, homegrown jobs.
Representative Nadler, whose district includes a large portion of Manhattan, said taxpayers in New York City were estimated to have paid over $2 billion in 2023 in order to pay for costs associated with climate-related events. Nadler said this burden should be instead carried by the very companies responsible for and aware of their impacts as polluters.
For over 60 years, these companies have known about their role in driving the climate crisis and have made massive profits from it. Despite this awareness, they have done little to nothing to address the harmful effects their practices have had on the environment and public health. In fact, for many years, they denied what they knew to be true about global warming. Instead, American taxpayers have been unfairly forced to bear the cost of mitigating the devastating impacts of the climate crisis, a burden that should rightfully belong to the companies responsible for it.
The legislation would set aside at least 40% of the fund to benefit investment for communities that have been affected the most by climate change. Mike Tidwell is the founder and executive director of the Chesapeake Climate Action Network, an environmental nonprofit. He said municipalities such as his home in Tacoma Park, Maryland, have found themselves with scarce resources to repair damage from climate-related weather events.
In Tacoma Park, Maryland, six metro stops from here, we got 5 inches of rain in 1 hour. In 1 hour in Tacoma Park, that rain flooded Tulip Avenue, where my church is, just a block from my house, spilled over into the playground of the preschool and started flooding the preschool, where there were children age 6 months to 10 years old. This happened in our neighborhood. The church leaders went to the city and said, you have to do something about this. We're talking about a preschool flooding like it never happened before. And the city said, we're broke. We've already spent our $500,000 in water management in the city. We have no money.
Policymakers say one way to help build support for the bill is to cite precedent for past cleanup efforts, such as the Superfund program. That program required corporations to clean up their toxic waste or to pay a fee so that the Environmental Protection Agency could do it for them. I'm Zanuck Ball, reporting for KPFA.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Audie McAfee, Jose Velasquez, and Zinnick Ball. Reporting from the KMUD studio in Redway, I'm Lisa Music.